Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Everybody, welcome to Group Answers. This is episode 73. My name is Chris Surratt, and I am here, as always, with my amazing co-host, Brian Daniel.
That's the first time I've been called amazing ever on this show.
Well, it's not the last time, I will say that.
It's good to be here again, Chris.
Man, this is going to be a lot of fun. We've mentioned it the last couple of episodes, but we have moved up to the big leagues when it comes to podcasts. We were playing in the minors. We were probably like a strong double A, wouldn't you say?
We're coming out. It was strong, yeah, high A ball.
High
double
A ball,
a, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. We weren't high A ball.
We had moved past Summer League.
We were Columbus.
Yeah, we were probably Columbus. So, but we've moved up to the majors. We are part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. There are some amazing podcasts a part of this. 5LQ, 5 Leadership Questions, EST, which is a new podcast, J.D. Greer has a podcast. Ask Me Anything, which I would love to hear some of that. That's going to be fun. There's just some great podcasts, so we're so excited to be a part of that.
And he's not talking about state capital questions on that.
No, really. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. But mission of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network is to serve the church in her mission of making disciples by providing and promoting podcasts, which we are one of, that help grow believers and the local church. That's a lot of pressure. That we're doing both of those things. We're helping grow believers and the local church.
Yeah, and the changes, it might be important to note, you know, we're moving from a every other week, or I think that's semi-weekly, to a weekly show.
Yes.
Which has been a lot of fun.
It has. It means we're in the studio a lot more together, which I like.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Brian, I'm not so sure, but he shows up, so it's good.
He shows up,
but it means a lot more content, which we have brought in some reinforcements to help us with this. Last show, we had our director of groups, Michael Kelly, in with us. We had a lot of fun force-ranking discipleship books, which I don't even know if that's okay to do, but we did it. We've got one coming up that's really not going to be maybe okay, a force ranking, but that's going to be fun.
Oh, right? That's right.
Yes, power ranking. We'll leave that.
Already some office conversation on that one.
Yes. We won't drop it yet. It's coming. But the guy who actually was behind that idea is in the studio with us today, Brendan Hiltebeitel.
Common spelling.
Yep.
It's good to be here. Yes, very standard last name.
Yes, if you could move closer to your mic, that'd be awesome.
I cannot, there, I'm afraid.
Okay. He has the hardest pronounced name in the history of last names. Yes.
Brandon is fine.
Something like that.
Yeah, we'll go with Brandon.
But we're going to talk about a not so fun topic, but I think it's a topic that a lot of us as group leaders deal with. Brian, you want to set us up?
So before we do that, so just a little bit more about Brandon. Brandon's been with us before. He's an elder at his church. I have heard Brandon preach a couple of times, and Brandon, you're one of the best
preaches.
Yeah, you're one of the best communicators I've heard. I'm not kidding you. If it wasn't true, I just wouldn't say anything
about it
in this context.
Did not have
and
to come
someone
up.
That I've gotten to know, his wife Scarlett. When's Scarlett's first book coming out?
January 15th, I believe.
It's around the corner.
Afraid of All the Things by Scarlett Hiltebeitel.
Do we have to work through her agent to get her on the show?
I've already scheduled her to be on the show.
So it was that easy.
I am not her agent.
It was that easy.
She is not famous enough at this point to not do the things that I ask her nicely to do. She's very kind.
I heard we blew the FY19 budget on that episode.
That is not what I heard.
We have a budget?
No, apparently not anymore.
So yeah, for episode 73, we're going to be looking at difficult people in your small group, and so I think we all have experiences with this. Anyone that's been in group life for really any measure of time, but I do think that the experiences will range in intensity. I saw some of the notes that Brandon has brought with him, and you know, I don't know that I have experienced in my years anything that's close to that. So I wonder if your, you know, more pastoral position maybe puts you in some different contexts. And Chris, it's going to be really interesting to hear about some of your experiences. So, but the fact is that in group leadership and in group life, you're going to run into And I don't think it's fair to really label some people as difficult. We're just being people. I mean, you put people in community and in certain context, and you, in most any worthwhile group conversation, it's going to be a little heavy-handed. You know, there are moments of intensity. There's moments of personal revelation that puts people on the spot, and you just never know how people are going to react, and people have most often, or a lot of the times, very strong opinions about some of the things that you're discussing in group. So it's just going to come out.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Heather Zimpel, wrote a book called Community is Messy, because it's people. You're dealing with people, and they're messy. We tend to call these EGRs, extra grace required people in your group. And I always tell group leaders, if you don't know who the EGRs are, you probably are the EGR.
Yeah.
Because you're right, you're going to have opinions about things, and some people are stronger than others. And I think a good kind of jumping off point is what even constitutes a difficult person, because we all have personalities. Personalities are going to clash. We have opinions. Opinions are going to be different. So I think sometimes we can kind of misconstrue what is difficult for somebody that's just strong. Or, you know, talks a lot.
Right. And, you know, as we sit here and think about this, one of the things that I would add is, if you had to choose between someone that may be an EGR, or you may classify as difficult, or someone that did not participate at all, I may take the difficult person, depending on what that, you know, what that attribute may be, or what's making them require extra grace.
I think that's a good point. Somebody who doesn't participate can be difficult.
Fair enough.
Because they're just sitting there. So, Brandon, talk a little bit about what your experience is.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think this question, on a general level, what makes a difficult group member, is important just as a filter in group leadership, and probably about any type of leadership. What is on your radar from a challenging standpoint? So, you know, we kind of touched on you can have members who talk too much, don't talk enough, members who are not nice enough, that type of stuff that we're going to have to wrestle with on a practical level from a group discussion standpoint. But the range is really larger than that. And if you're stepping into a discipleship environment in a leadership position, I think you have to have on some level an awareness and an availability to deal with some bigger issues than just, man, you could have said that nicer, or you know what? Why don't you speak up and share? We want to hear from everybody in the group. I mean, there's going to be times when the difficult quote unquote member in the group is going to be somebody who's constantly confessing the same sin every week and doesn't seem to be repenting in any way. There's no change coming there. And man, as the person who you said, I'm going to be kind of your under shepherd, I'm going to be the pastor, a pastor figure in your life. That's a difficult relationship when you have to step into, okay, now where's the change coming from? How are you really growing towards joy in Jesus in this area of your life that keeps coming up? And then, man, I think in a discipleship context, in a group environment, a level even beyond that that's difficult to navigate is when, that I think we should touch on some during this time, is when the group member has negative feelings and is vocalizing problems that they have with the church philosophy or the style of church. Like, you know, when the discussion question suddenly is about, you know, what songs we're picking or what ex-pastor said, and they've got problems with the leadership. Man, as a leader at the church, which you are if you're leading the group, that's something that I think you have to be willing and able to step into. So just generally speaking, I think knowing that there's a wide range of discipleship relationships and opportunities is important for a leader to think about.
It's a little bit of a tough question to answer for me, to be honest with you, is what constitutes a difficult person. And let's just stick with that language because it's easy to understand. We could talk about requiring extra grace, but some of the things that I've run into even recently are you know, individuals that continue to transition our conversation off topic into pet subjects. Which requires, you know, so then, and usually that's a flashpoint. So someone feels like they've got to react to it. And the next thing you know, you're off topic. And so as a leader, you're spending a lot of time just managing, just getting the group back on subject. Fortunately, in our group, that doesn't happen a lot, but it has happened. And a part of that, frankly, is the study you know, what we choose to talk about. Like, I should have known when I chose religious liberty, for instance, that the potential was there.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And the season, I mean, we're going through a political season right now, and that's going to bring out some opinions, obviously, that may not be there at other times of the year.
And one of the things that I personally, and I guess as a leader, there's things that you handle better than other things, right? And
right.
And this
mm-hmm.
broader topic. So people that tend to be more talkative and don't allow, you know, in the terms of your time constraints, they don't give a lot of leeway for other contributions. And that does two things. One, you use a lot of time hearing one reaction, but then it has a subduing effect where there's a group just tend to, there's a chance that they're going to shut down.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that come to mind when I think about these difficult situations. And of course, there are much more intense examples as well.
Yeah. I tend to classify them, I call them the four D's. They don't always fit perfectly in these, but you've got the dodger, which is that person we talked about who never enters the conversation. And you'll look at them for an answer, and you know they can speak into this, and they just dodge the question, or they never enter in, and that's tough. And then you've got what you talked about, Brian, the dominator, that's going to always dominate the conversation. And every group has one of these to some degree or another. You just have somebody who's willing to, and in a lot of times as a facilitator, I tend to like the dominator at first because they're the ones who break the silence, who jump in, but then they'll dominate the conversation and nobody else can kind of speak into it, or you know, it goes their direction every time. And then you've got the debater. Somebody who always wants to debate the issue. And some debate is okay. You know, it's, you want to have those conversations where people feel open to express their opinions. But then there's just those people, you know who they are, mm-hmm. that they just debate everything. I mean, even if, you know, you're like, you don't believe that and you want to debate it. It's just, they're just kind of that way. And then you have what I call the drainer, the Debbie Downer, that, you know, every time it comes to that person, it's, woe is me. You know, they tend to, a lot of times they'll dominate the prayer request time because it's all about kind of what they're going through. And after about 4 or 5 weeks of the same thing, you know, just kind of drains the life out of the conversation and yeah. out of the group. And so not that everybody can fit into those, but, you know, those four D's tend to be the more difficult ones of the group.
So, Brandon, you've got a couple of intense situations that you've dealt with, like with confession of particular sins.
Yeah.
I mean, would you care to share, like, specific, not, I mean,
can you share your sin?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
How long is
Example.
The podcast? And honestly, I make that joke, but that's true, you know? And I think that's important for people like us and people listening that want to handle difficult people well, is to remember the common ground that we all have as difficult people. That's mm-hmm. When we talked about this topic, that's the first thing that came to my mind is I find myself, so I'm an elder at my church, as Brian said, I find myself in conversations with people in my group, conversations with people outside of my group around challenging things often. That's one of the major roles of the elders at our church. It's a very fun team to be a part of, as you get to have the tough conversations. Mm-hmm. If you don't know me and you go to my church and I invite you to coffee, you should probably ask yourself why. but I will say, like, inside a group, outside a group, these difficult conversations, one thing I always want to start with is, yes, I am a sinner. Like, there is a common ground in brokenness. If you know, Paul called himself the chief of sinners. He said, in talking about, you know, listing sins, he said, and such were you all. And I always know that that's true. And I know that I may be that again. Anytime I sit across from somebody in Starbucks and we're going to talk about sin in their life or their attitude toward the church, or even if it is something as simple as the way that they're interacting in the group discussion, it's, I want to know that I could be in that chair again at some point, and I want the person sitting on my side to love me like Jesus loves me, to have a redemptive, restorative approach. So I've been in that chair. I know I may be in that chair again. So I think that's really something to make a foundational understanding for having these types of conversations, is mm-hmm. that there's no non-sinners in those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
The person instigating and the person listening, responding, is, we're all you know, broken, and we all need Christ. So, yeah.
I think that's so important. I have a mentor when I first started out in ministry, and he had this thing that when he would have a problem with somebody, he would always like take him to coffee. It's always coffee, right? So never go to coffee with the pastor.
Or caramels.
Never do that. I also had another pastor that you knew.
Well, lunch
is
too expensive for those conversations.
That's true. That's true. And you're too busy eating, especially if you're eating like a salad, you know, and you're spitting leaves and all that. It's not good. But I also had a pastor who used to bite his lip. You knew you were in trouble when he would start biting his lip. It's like, don't go to coffee with that guy. But yeah, he would sit down and the first thing he would say is, help me understand. So kind of because we don't know what's behind those comments. We don't know what's behind, you know, that attitude that they have. There's probably hurt because, you know, the saying is hurt people hurt people. And so it's getting to know them, kind of understanding their brokenness, as Brandon said. Help me understand where you're coming from. What's your story? Because once we hear that, then we can have that conversation of, okay, let's go forward with this. Right. How can we get healing? How can we help you in this group situation? And I think the coffee is important because we don't want to do this in the context of the group meeting.
Yeah.
You know, you want to praise for publicly, sure, criticize privately. So it's moving it outside of that group time and having that conversation over coffee.
And I think the help me understand question serves another big time purpose, and it really does help bring clarity to both perspectives. Mm. So I'm going to go as the sort of the counselor figure, as the leader who's brought us to this moment. I'm going to go in with my assumptions as to why there's difficulty, whatever it may be. Hmm. In asking, help me understand, it gives me a chance to ask myself on behalf of either my leadership or the group or the church itself, is there something that we have failed in? Hmm. Be it small or large. Like, I think anytime you're in one of those contexts and you have a chance to own something, you have a chance to apologize for anything you can possibly apologize for, because it's very rare where both seats are going to or there's perfection in either seat, you know. Mm-hmm. And so asking that question gives you a chance, I think, to sort of pre-serve grace in saying, yeah, I'm part of that. Here's where I agree with you. Yeah, we should have done this better, or mm-hmm. or whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of things, Brandon. You said, you know, basically what you're saying is we're all difficult people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't go into those conversations and the sort of posture that you're describing,
right,
you know, I would recommend, and all joking aside, maybe asking someone close to you, a spouse would be perfect for this. So why don't you just tell me real quick the ways that I might be difficult in our relationship, just as a reminder that you're not, you know, maybe you're not so great after all. But I would also add, in these situations, as a leader, as a group leader, or as a small group coach, you may ask yourself, do some introspection, ask yourself if you've done a good job on establishing what the vision of the group is.
Yeah.
And before you go into those meetings, be sure that you understand what the vision of the group is, why we get together every week. And it doesn't have to be some sort of formalized statement, but you need to be able to verbalize, this is what we're doing. And as a part of that discussion, just reminding people, okay, maybe you begin the conversation, I think help me understand is really good, but another thing that you could get at the top of that conversation is just to talk through why we're doing what we're doing. And maybe that would serve as a way to help. And maybe this is the first meeting, Chris, before you get into an actual critique, unless it's just really a tough situation.
Right.
And just remind the person, so this is where we are, this is what we're trying to be. Mm-hmm. And so anytime that we get off of that, we're getting away from our vision and mission, and you know, that's a tactic of the enemy.
And I think something that helps with that conversation is having a why for the group that they understand from the beginning, and that having a group covenant or a group agreement. When you start your group, first of every semester, I start my group with a group agreement, a covenant. And so it gives the details of the group. We're going to meet every week this time, but also this is why we exist as a group. And that's to help people take their next spiritual steps. So having that to kind of go back to, I also use a leader agreement when I oversee group leaders, and we start a a relationship as a group leader and a group coach or a group director, I have a group agreement that you're agreeing to these things to be a group leader. And when I have an issue with a group leader, I always bring that out and say, let's start here. You know, this is what you agreed to. Help me understand why this isn't happening or you're not meeting these expectations. And usually there's a good reason. There's been a life issue or something like that that we can talk through. But having that why, Brian, what you're talking about, down on paper or at least understood by the group can help that conversation go a little bit easier. Also, I want to talk about when you need to bring somebody else into the conversation. And Brandon, you may be a good one for this. Is there a time, and I've had a time as a pastor where I had to be brought in to a difficult situation with a group, but there are times, there are levels of difficulty where you might need to ask a pastor or an elder to kind of step into the conversation, bring them into it. What's a good way to do that?
Yeah. First I'd say, it can be immediate if you're outside of your depths. I mean, it depends on what the difficulty is, what you're trying to wrestle through. I don't think anybody should feel like they got to be a hero and bear something they're not able to bear. But if it is,
for instance,
you know, I remember one time getting invited to lunch, not knowing what it was about, and it was the dad. As soon as we sat down, it was a man, and he started crying, told me that the night before his son had told him that he was gay. And at the time, I would be able to navigate that some now, but this was 10 years ago. I was a 25-year-old pastor, and at the time, my body shut down. Like,
I've had those moments.
Where the chips and salsa, where are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes you just need to bring somebody in because you don't have the wisdom or you know, you're not going to be able to bring enough support.
And if you're asking the question or wondering, then you probably do.
Yeah.
And if it's a church issue.
Yes, say, for sure.
Which I've hit as well, where there was gossip in a group about church leadership. And I had to step in and meet with that group.
Right.
I think gender things would fall into that category.
Sure.
I mean, everyone should know that by now, but it bears, right. it's worth saying as well.
But I feel like the heart of the question is sort of, when is this getting escalated? Mm-hmm. And I can kind of bring it back to, we're trying to give some sort of practical steps to this, you know, where you come to the table remembering that you're a sinner, trying to discover, as Chris said, trying to discover how the problem is perceived, what is my level of ownership in it. At some point, you're going to get to a deciding the path forward. And I always like to put that as much on the person I'm with as possible. If they're the one, quote unquote, difficult, man, so we've talked about this. What is it that you say? So maybe it's not something as simple as the way you're navigating the discussion. What does it look like to fix this? A besetting sin that just doesn't seem to get better. Man, what is the next step? What do you think the next step is? If it's a problem with the church, then it's, you know, okay, what is the path forward? Like, how are we going to have peace here? And just steering that as much as possible, but really giving them the chance to own it. I think where someone else comes in is when that doesn't happen. Mm. So, man, last 2 weeks ago, we were in this Starbucks and you told me you thought your heart posture towards the church would change if you got on a ministry team. I'm still hearing you haven't done that. I'm still hearing you dropping bombs about our pastor or whatever. I think that's where you're like, okay, we're not getting there. We're going to have to, I'm basically calling for backup and doing the, you know, bring the person with a witness and with a friend and hopefully another perspective. Once you get there, though, I mean, that's essentially a nuclear moment because you've brought in, generally speaking, a relationship that isn't as close and you kind of formalized it. So I try to avoid that, but there is a way back from that too. I've experienced getting to that point and still finding peace and a healthy path forward. But
in your experiences, guys, is the other person aware more often than not of the problem? Or have you experienced, like, when you're in those conversations, you know, the person's like, I had no idea?
I think in my experience, most of the time they do. They've been told they have this weakness or this blind spot before.
Even the drainer?
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, the drainer is probably the hardest one to, and that doesn't usually bring itself to a coffee outside of the meeting.
Yeah,
That's kind of doing prayer requests a different way to avoid some of that. So I don't usually hit that. But usually somebody that dominates or they have a habitual sin, I mean, they know it's there. Yeah. Sometimes they just need it pointed out. So that's kind of my experience. So when do you get to the point that you may need to ask somebody to leave a group? I mean, that's, you talk about nuclear.
Yeah.
You know, or as George W. Bush, nuclear. At that point, that's a huge deal, right?
So, yeah, this is something I've had to, as a group leader and as an elder, had to process for the sort of the micro level of the group or, I mean, the church itself. We've, you know, asking people to leave the church. And I wrote down two questions that I think you can ask. Is anything changing? I think is a basic question. If you're having these conversations over and over again and there's no shift, at some point, that in and of itself makes it easy for there to be, you know, a disentangling of the relationship. Like, man, we've been doing this. It's not fixing it. I think we need to try something else. And that's when you can ask. I've asked several people in more on the church side of things. Man, what you're describing to me just isn't our church. That's okay. Is there a better church situation for you? And then you're kind of loving them to something that might fit them better. But so I think it depends on the type of the difficulty. But you want to, if you're not seeing anything change, then sometimes it's better to give somebody else a shot.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I think that obviously it's tough when that happens. But if it has become toxic for the group and there are people that have, you know, it's toxic to the group. Sometimes it's dangerous. I have actually stepped into situations where somebody was a danger to the group. Hmm. This was in a singles type group, and it was a guy that was obviously becoming creepy to women in the group, and we had to ask him to leave.
Yeah.
And eventually had to ask him to leave the church, and that's very difficult.
Yeah.
Now, in my 19 years of discipleship, small group, pastor experience, that's happened a handful of times. I mean, literally, I could probably think of five times where we have asked somebody to leave a group. And at least two times we have actually asked a group to quit meeting, because I think a group itself can become toxic. I mean, when it becomes more about gossip, when it becomes about it's detrimental to the church, when there's gossip about the church and the church leadership and things are not changing, you might have to ask a group, if you're a group pastor or point person, to stop meeting. And that's hard. That's really tough, because they're probably going to leave your church. Yeah. And you have to be okay with that.
Chris, when you experienced that, was that as a group leader, or was that more in the overseer role?
That was in the overseer role.
So I assume the group leader brought that to your attention, or what? How did you even find out about the toxic group?
The toxic group was brought to us by somebody in the group. It actually wasn't the leader of the group. It was somebody attending the group. They recognized it was not a good direction and asked us to step in. And so we started having meetings. It was multiple meetings before we asked the group to break up.
In your experience, is it more difficult to like shut down a group or to ask an individual to leave a group?
Probably shut down the group.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you've got several people that are bought into this group, and they're feeding off of the gossip. They're feeding off of the negativity. And so to ask them to stop doing that, and, you know, obviously they have some anger issues and some issues with the church in general. And that's the only reason we would step in for that.
So, Brandon and Chris, so when you've asked an individual to leave a group, so Chris, you said what, a handful of times.
And
Brandon, you've obviously done it too. Did you go to that person with a plan in place to go to another group, or did you leave that up to them? How did you go? What was your solution? I have gone into that situation with a proposal.
Yeah.
And trying to avoid maybe even getting into a lot of the details of the reasons. So, because I don't want this to be a debate or an argument, I want it to be a transition.
Yeah.
But how have you guys handled that?
Yeah, I think options are good.
Other group options, yeah.
Yeah, and and multiple even at that, because again, I want to give them the chance to self-identify, you know, what the improvement might look like. So what the path more might look like. Let me throw out another option. It wasn't a dissolvement actually, but I've only closed down one group years ago that was, I would say, borderline toxic. I think a truly toxic group just doesn't survive. People are just going to stop coming. Mm-hmm. But we had a drainer for sure. And we had a dominator. Was that one of the D's?
Yep.
Yeah, we had one of each. And it just made one out of every three nights were really awkward. And I just felt like we'd been together for 9 months to a year, I guess. And I just thought, this is not it. But it wasn't like we need to blow this up. So basically, I presented a path forward to the whole group based on who I knew might relate well with one another and whose strengths might cover weaknesses and vice versa. And, you know, who's the most gracious, loving person to really walk with this drainer, you know? And so I came to a group night and basically proposed, you know, I called it multiplying the group. And I had essentially sort of pre-drafted. I said, man, here's what I think a healthy version of this group might be if we're in two locations. And I presented them with basically two new groups. I think your group has to be a decent size for that to even be an option. Mm-hmm. But I think painting a potentially wiser path forward relationally is an interesting option. I've only tried it one time and it worked, so it's only one data point. But
based on knowing what you know.
Yeah, because we'd been together, yeah. And I, you know, you kind of see which relationships are strong, yeah. Which are weak, which is causing the friction, and you just want to try to mitigate that.
So. That's great.
But in that situation, you're making a distinction between what Chris would call a toxic group and something that's just not working for some reason.
Yeah. It was,
which made you said borderline toxic.
It was just not, well, you know, we're together to grow, yeah. To grow towards Jesus and to be iron sharpen iron. And I think you should leave that, even in conviction, you should leave that with joy. Mm-hmm. And if you're leaving most weeks like, man, that was rough, or that was a struggle to get through, that's not really what discipleship should feel like, I don't think. So
you're a much better group leader than I am. We had a group like that, and pretty similar. Every week it was like, I can't do this again. I can't do this. So I just stopped leading the group. So we just stopped the group. But, man, that's a much better way forward.
It seems like in group life there's natural rhythms. We've talked about it on the show before. So, I mean, early meetings are like early episodes of Seinfeld when you go back and see them, and it's like, I can't believe I like this show.
Awkwardness. Yes.
That's right. And then you hit a comfort zone, but
it's like season three. Yeah.
There is a place in there to where you know what you got, and it's going to be good, or you're not going to grow. And I would think that's somewhere in that 9 to 12 month range. So I wonder, as a group leader, if you're launching new groups and, you know, a small group pastors, maybe you counsel group leaders that are starting new groups, you know, let's check back in regularly, of course, but let's think in terms of 9 to 12 months, and let's do an evaluation and see if we want to do something like, Brandon, what you're proposing, that maybe there's a better way to organize these individuals, yeah. Knowing what we know now that we didn't know before.
Yeah, you have a great point. I always say it takes a group about a year to really gel, to really know who you have. People are going to kind of come and go and see if it fits for them. So give your group, you know, at least 9 months, but hopefully a year before you start making those kind of decisions. Well, that's a great conversation, tough topic, but hopefully that was helpful for you, how to deal with your EGRs, your extra grace required, difficult people in your group. Brian, you want to talk about another awesome podcast on our awesome network?
We referenced it earlier, but this is the EST podcast with co-host Sam Rayner, which if you know Sam, he's a great guy. Micah Fries, Josh King. And this team introduces you to experienced church leaders who are dealing with the same challenges as most others who lead established churches. And Chris, for those of us that didn't know, that's what EST means, established churches.
All right, I just figured that out right now.
In each episode, wow. You will hear solutions to everyday issues church leaders face. So if you're a pastor or leader in an established church trying to navigate the complexities of your congregation, this show's for you. You can find out more information at est.church.
All right, so check that out. This will do it for episode 73 of Group Answers. I want to say thank you to Brandon for dropping by.
It's awesome to be here, but I feel like you're about to hang up, so I just want to say real quickly, I publicly wanted to thank Brian Daniel for introducing me to Dole Whip. We were in Orlando together just a few weeks ago. I'd never had a Dole Whip.
You've never had Dole Whip?
And now, thanks to him, I've had a Dole Whip. Thank you, Brian. Good.
I'll add that to my list of accomplishments.
And thank you guys for having me.
Put it on your resume.
One at a time.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time for Group Answers, Episode 74.